from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Are you the kind of person who puts tasks off to the absolute last minute? Or do you get to things right away, sometimes even before they're due? Marin County clinical psychologist Mary Lamia has written a new book all about procrastination, and she'll join us in studio to explain the underlying emotions that play a role in how we get things done or not. The science of procrastination, that's up next after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Responding to email, preparing for that meeting you need to go to, tidying up the kitchen. Why is it that tasks like those are often put aside for things like watching television or surfing the internet? Bay Area psychologist Mary Lamia joins us this hour to discuss her new book, What Motivates Getting Things Done? Procrastination, Emotions, Success. And we're going to talk with her about why people procrastinate, what emotions are at play when they do, and how to improve productivity. Welcome to Forum, Dr. Mary Lamia.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. And a lot of work went into this book, a lot of research. Congratulations on it. And you learn, of course, that procrastination is often a stigma. Shouldn't be a stigma, huh?
It should not be a stigma. Procrastinators get a very bad reputation. And in fact, the highly successful people I studied, many of them were procrastinators. And the procrastinators were amazing at the way in which they could pull something off at a deadline. In fact, I've been very humbled by my inquiry into motivational styles, and I have changed my opinion dramatically about procrastination. I'm not a procrastinator. I'm anything but a procrastinator.
But you used to think it was bad. Now you don't?
They are completely vindicated in this book.
Well, there are different kinds of procrastination, though, aren't there? Different kind of procrastinators?
Well, I separate out people who are deadline-driven procrastinators from people who fail. There's a huge difference. People who procrastinate, who are, I call, deadline-driven, have this surge of energy at a deadline that enables them to focus their attention and get things done. And all of this is based on the emotions that are activated when a deadline is imminent. People who delay and don't get the job done are very different. They often blame it on procrastinating. But in fact, you know, people want to save face when they feel shame, and procrastination is a good excuse.
Well, since you mentioned shame, there's a good deal of analysis in your book about negative emotions, shame being one, anxiety, distress, disgust, and so forth. Go through that whole list like the seven deadly sins, fear. And these things can help you if you are delaying or if you find yourself in that limbo of procrastination. And I think your argument is they're your ally.
Emotions help us with everything we do. Emotions motivate us. And the designation of emotions as positive or negative has nothing to do with their value. It has to do with how they motivate us through the way they make us feel. Emotions like fear and shame and anger motivate us because we want to relieve ourselves of their effects, or we want to avoid their effects. It's not that they're toxic or bad and we shouldn't try to just get rid of them. We should understand them and use them because they motivate us to get things done. They motivate everything we do.
They can also immobilize us, though, right?
Absolutely. If you don't understand your emotions and you are afraid of your emotions, when, for example, when people think of fear, if you're afraid of your fear, it becomes amplified. Or if you're afraid of your distress, when you feel a lot of distress, some people call it anxiety, and then you become upset because you're distressed, it becomes amplified or bigger. And you know, you may be familiar with some of the current research about, is stress bad for us? Well, stress is actually only bad for you if you think it is bad for you, if you believe it is bad for you, because when you feel stress and you become distressed by the feeling, it does become amplified. And then you get this unease that could upset you and distract you.
We're talking with Mary Lumia, clinical psychologist in private practice and author of What Motivates Getting Things Done, Procrastination, Emotions, and Success. She's also a professor at the Wright Institute in Berkeley. And What Motivates Getting Things Done? You may have some thoughts about this. Let me invite you to join us. You can email us or call us. And the real questions are, what tasks do you put off and why? Or if you've overcome procrastination, we want you to perhaps share your tricks and ways that you have managed to do this, or questions that you might have in general about the whole nature of procrastination and emotions. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls with any questions or comments you might have. And again, the number to call is 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or tweet us. We're at KQED Forum, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum.
Michael, you just did it. You said overcome procrastination. And that is part of my point. Even though the book is not about procrastination as much as it is about emotions and how emotions motivate us, do we really need to overcome procrastination? There are so many books about beating, overcoming, getting rid of one's tendencies to procrastinate. And yet, it's such a difficult thing to do because people have these styles that develop, I found from the time they're in third grade, the way they did their homework. Did you do your homework before you went out to play? Or did you do your homework, you know, after you played because you wanted to enjoy yourself first? Is it bad to enjoy yourself first? Not really, because there are two criteria I found that make people successful. It boils down to never missing a deadline and does your work reflect your best efforts?
We're not necessarily going to get mired in this, but you said stress isn't bad for you. You can get heartburn from stress. You can get all kinds of physical difficulties
sure
from stress.
Sure you can. Emotions can overwhelm us, and they can cause heartburn and things like that. They can cause people to become very, very much afraid and withdraw. And that's where I say it's very important to understand your emotions and what your emotions are telling you. Emotions are information. And then we assign cognitions to them and we give them meaning. So I may feel distress. Does that mean I shouldn't get in that elevator because I think it's going to not open? Or should I not do certain things? The cognitions we often assign to our emotions are erroneous. Emotions give us information, and we assign value to them.
You talked about success, though, and the whole question of success, because there are different motivational styles, obviously. There are people who want to get things done last minute and have success as a result. And there are people who sort of take their time and do it maybe even somewhat incrementally.
I should explain the difference to you.
Well, what's more successful, I guess, would be my immediate question. Maybe you can begin by explaining the difference, but then let's talk about...
They are both successful. I separated people out, and there's a range. I mean, some people are very flexible in their approach to tasks. There are task-driven people, and then there are deadline-driven people.
We're talking about a big spectrum, really, aren't we?
Yes, but many people can be sorted into those two categories, even though there's flexibility in their approach. Task-driven people are those whose emotions are activated when they see a task that is uncompleted. If the laundry needs to be folded and it's time for bed, they'll often think they need to fold the laundry before they go to sleep, or they need to do something. If they see a task that's not completed, they want to get it done and get it off their plate.
Excuse me, since you're talking about doing the laundry, sometimes menial tasks will take precedence. I'll do this in a menial way, like the laundry, because I don't want to really get to the report that's due tomorrow.
That's the other style, and there's a method to that. Okay, so task-driven people have emotions that are activated when a task isn't done. They're task-driven. Deadline-driven procrastinators are a little bit different. You know, their emotions are activated when a deadline is near. And so they don't have the anxiety that task-driven people have about uncompleted tasks until the deadline is imminent or until they create a deadline in other ways. Now, when their anxiety begins to become activated at a deadline, they think of all kinds of other things to do because they're mobilized in some way. So they see the dishes that aren't done, they see the laundry that's not folded, and they see the other things that they haven't done, and they often complete a whole series of tasks at the point at which they have a project to complete or any task to complete at a deadline. But the point is that they don't miss deadlines. The high achievers I studied do not ever miss deadlines. They may do something at the last second, but they don't miss a deadline. In contrast, these task-driven people may do something ahead of time, but they often make revisions. I always say if you get an email from a task-driven person that says, read this document, and then an hour later you receive another email that says, read this one instead, you can bet that's a task-driven person. They tend to revise. Procrastinators who are deadline-driven tend to do everything in one sitting.
Talking about procrastination with clinical psychologist Mary Lamia, her book is called What Motivates Getting Things Done? Procrastination, Emotions, and Success. She's professor at the Wright Institute over in Berkeley, and we're going to bring our callers into this. Just some interesting facts, though, that some of you may want to at least muse upon that I discovered. There's now some speculation that procrastination may even be genetic and may be inherited. And also, according to Mary Lamia's book, about 70-90% of college students procrastinate to some degree or another. Now, the Huffington Post says that 20-40% of all of us consider ourselves chronic procrastinators. And there's a whole spectrum, as I said, obviously, about procrastination. But they're not all failing, are they? Pardon?
They're not all failing. In fact, I was just giving
as you've been pointing out, many of them are quite successful.
I was just giving a presentation at the 10th Biennial Procrastination Conference in Chicago, and what's interesting is somebody said the highest procrastination behavior is at the Ivy League schools. Those people aren't failing.
Let me bring in our callers, and we'll begin with Daniel. Daniel, join us. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for having me. Great topic. And I was calling because in having experienced somebody in my own family that started off as a procrastinator and putting things on, and then that sort of became a slippery slope that led to hoarding and really sort of deep-rooted hoarding behaviors and the inability then to move. I think the procrastination led to a lot of things piling up that then became very daunting. I'm not sure I came to the conversation late, but have you talked about any correlation between the two when it becomes an extreme in that way? Thank you. I'll take my answer off here.
All right. Thank you for the question.
Thanks for the question, Daniel. There have been some studies on procrastination and hoarding, especially recently. And however, I don't see that kind of behavior as having to do with procrastination. I mean, we can call it procrastination because people hesitate to give things up or get things done. But that's part of my point is the word procrastination has been used as an excuse for all kinds of other emotional issues that are very complex. But
it's often used as an excuse for failure, isn't it?
Yes. And so there's a big difference between people who delay and get things done and those who delay and do not.
Dylan wants to know if you can discuss the connection between procrastination and discipline. I feel undisciplined when I procrastinate.
Many people who procrastinate tend to put themselves down in some way. And, you know, and I'm not surprised because a lot of the procrastination researchers have referred to them, unfortunately, as slackers with low motivation and low conscientiousness and all kinds of
see things very differently than you.
Yeah. And I made it clear that we shouldn't shame people who procrastinate because it is a valid motivational style. Yes, it may feel undisciplined because your attention is not directed. When emotions direct our attention, they motivate us. And so when your attention is not directed to a task you you know has to get done at some point, you may feel undisciplined. But as soon as the deadline is near, if you feel focused and your attention is drawn to the task, that's much different. And that's what I'm saying procrastinators do.
Well, what about agonizing over choice? I mean, sometimes I suppose that could be labeled as procrastination when, you know, the choices are extremely difficult and somebody just feels themselves in a kind of holding pattern. Yeah,
that's more obsessing rather than procrastinating or deliberating, or it's other things. We call all kinds of things procrastination that aren't.
But how can you actually term procrastination a valid motivational style? I mean, because procrastination has always sort of been semantically linked with not doing things because you're putting it off till tomorrow when you can do it today.
We early birds tend to think that we're right, don't we? When we do things ahead of time, we think we're right because Benjamin Franklin said the early bird gets the worm, didn't he? I mean, and it is not necessarily the case. If you complete tasks at a deadline and you do it well, what difference does it make whether you do it ahead of time or you do it at that deadline? The problem we get into is in relationships. If one person is a task-driven person and they get things done ahead of time and the other person is deadline-driven, a deadline-driven procrastinator, and they do things at a deadline, that presents a problem because task-driven people don't really trust that their procrastinating partners or coworkers are going to get something done. They also don't appreciate that procrastinators get things done at a deadline and get away with it.
There's an article by Tim Urban, who writes a blog for the New York Times, and he says negative feelings with procrastination can snowball, last-minute panic and all the rest of that sort of thing. But it can also really, and I think this is what you're saying, make you do the job, bring you to action. He also says maybe you need to forgive yourself, by the way, for feeling bad or shameful about procrastinating. But he's suggesting that, again, it's the negative emotion that's propelling you.
You mentioned two things. One was regret and the other is the negative emotion. The negative emotion absolutely is what propels you, and that's why people need to understand their negative emotion better. Procrastinators who often get into this frenzy of activity and anxiety at a deadline think of it as a bad thing, and they often think it's pathological because their emotion is activated so intensely, whereas task-driven people have emotion that's activated all the time to uncompleted tasks. And so what's more stressful? I mean, we should ask ourselves, is it more stressful to be activated with anxiety every time you see something that has to be done, or activated intensely at a deadline all at once? Now, as far as regret is concerned, highly successful people, high achievers, tend to have regret about what they do. Regret is is related to a shame response. It teaches us something. Regret enables us to take a look at ourselves, self-supervise, think about how we could have done it differently, possibly do it differently the next time. But it allows us to take a look inside. So regret is a good thing.
I'm not going to regret or procrastinate not going any more calls. Let me get some more of you on here. Ben goes up next. Ben, you're on. Hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I have this idea of micro procrastination that I'd like to get your thoughts on. And that is, I don't wait until the last minute of a deadline to get my work done. I'll do it over a 2-week period or however long. But I find myself procrastinating on a day-to-day basis where instead of, you know, doing a 4-block time of work, it gets crushed up into a fine powder and I distribute it along the day and do, you know, watch videos on YouTube or, you know, find myself doing things that are counterproductive to the task at hand.
Yeah, thanks, Ben, for the call. Mary Lemire.
Is it really counterproductive to be watching videos if you don't have the anxiety that mobilizes you to complete a task? If Ben watches a video and then all of a sudden his anxiety is activated because he sees the clock, then he's mobilized, then he's activated to get the task done. And that's what I'm talking about in the book in terms of how emotions motivate us. Sometimes it takes a time crunch in order to activate our emotions.
Joe wants to know, is there a relationship between depression and procrastination?
Some researchers have tried to make that link, and they have not gotten any significant results. Not necessarily. No.
Okay.
I have not seen any link in all the people I interviewed. You know, one of the things I try to help people understand in the book has to do with anxiety, because so much of what motivates us to get something done is when we feel anxiety. But what is anxiety? You know, anxiety is a combination of fear along with other emotions that are activated, and that produces the different ways in which anxiety is experienced. If you have fear and distress together, that's often what activates the emotion, like the feeling of tension that we have, or stress. Anxiety can be combined with excitement, and that makes anxiety can be fear and excitement, which makes people feel as though they're in the zone, or aroused, or stimulated. It's what you feel when you're about to go on a date with someone who's a romantic interest. Or anxiety can be combined with shame, and that is fear can be combined with shame, I'm sorry, and produce shame anxiety, and that is highly activating to people. The fear that you're going to be discovered as inadequate in some way makes people perform.
It's a catalyst, yeah. And here's Lisa joining us. Lisa, thanks for waiting.
Hey, I feel like I need to join an Al-Anon group for people who have relatives who are procrastinators. My brother's a highly smart Yale graduate of law school, but he procrastinates on, I can't say everything, but everything that he doesn't think is so important, like probating my mother's will, which is past 5 years. It makes me very anxious. I am, and his wife, who's a task-oriented person, but I'm just at the point where I don't know what to do. How do you motivate someone like that? He's not busy. He's retired, but he'll find enjoyable things that he likes to do, like refereeing soccer versus finishing the accounting for this will. And it makes me very anxious, and I don't want to make him anxious. I'm presuming anxiety is part of this. But I maybe not, you know, it looks like something else. And I'm just wondering, how do we motivate him? How do we save this marriage? How do I save this person?
What a great example,
well,
Lisa.
We're coming up on a break here. We'll have to get a response to Lisa when we return. And Mary Lamia will act as your savior, I hope, Lisa. And in the meantime, we are reminding you that we're talking to Mary Lamia, clinical psychologist in private practice, about what motivates getting things done. Procrastination, Emotions, and Success. That's actually the title of her book. She's professor at the Wright Institute in Berkeley, and comments are pouring in. I'll try to get to them and get to more of your calls, but we'll also try to answer Lisa. What do you do if you're dealing with a habitual procrastinator, and how do you make it through, and what's the best way to navigate? You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour with Bay Area psychologist Mary Lamia about her new book, What Motivates Getting Things Done? And you can join us at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or tweet us. We're at KQED Forum. And what tasks do you put off and why? And if you stop procrastinating, we do want to hear you let us know what your techniques were and the like. Before we went to the break, we heard from Lisa, who said she has a brother who's very bright and very able, but he keeps procrastinating things, particularly probating a will of their mother's. It's driving her as well as his wife nuts. And I'm looking at a comment by Stuart who says, essentially asking the same thing, can your guest touch on what it's like for others to deal with procrastinators? It's stress-inducing, to say the least. So we've got Lisa wanting you to save her, and then we've got other people wanting to know, how do you deal with this, particularly when it can be so exasperating and stressful?
Problem is, he doesn't feel any anxiety because there's no deadline to deal with that will. So I think Lisa has to give him a deadline and make it very clear. But it's hard not to shame.
You might say that's your deadline. It's not my
deadline. It's hard not to shame somebody who's doing that, because you become angry at them for delay, but he doesn't really have a deadline to work with. And if you sit down with him and not to be angry, but, you know, there is a little bit of guilt in there about, I would like to have this done because it would make me feel better and it would make all of us feel better. So let's find a date when you can get it done. And if he makes a promise to you that he will get it done at a certain date and time, and that's really what he will have to do.
And if he doesn't?
Well, he got through Yale Law School. He should be able to get it done.
All right. Let me read some more listener comments. Listener tweets, I work for a deadline-driven boss. The stress and chaos look more like poor planning. It was too stressful. I left. Here's Carol, who writes, I'm a deadline procrastinator for most things, but I've learned that certain things, such as learning a new piano piece, is a disaster if I wait until deadlines. Maybe what type of tasks don't work well when done at the last minute?
If you learn that something is a disaster when you do it at a deadline, a deadline-driven procrastinator generally will do something early. There's a lot of techniques they use to do things early, in fact. But, you know, so that's a good example of taking a look at how effective you are at a deadline and if you have to move something to earlier. In the same way, some task-driven people, when given too much time, one told me she takes the life out of something she writes because she revises it so many times because she starts way, way in advance. So she learned to do something closer to a deadline so she didn't take the life out of it by revising it and revising it and undoing what she had done. So there are ways in which we learn. We have to take a look at ourselves and learn from the way we do things.
Well, in fact, when you speak about writing, I can't help thinking about some of my own experiences because I delay writing, and I feel, you know, I should be writing and so forth. In fact, you know, writers have talked to me about this, and I know this phenomenon. You're thinking about all the things you have to do around the house, and you do those as opposed to doing the writing that you really want to do. You say, I have to go to the grocery store. You tell yourself you're doing things.
Especially if you're task-driven.
Yeah, but I learned an interesting trick, and that is, for example, somebody's writing about the fact that if you don't like to go to a workout, get your gym materials together. Give yourself that kind of a task, and then suddenly you have built up to the fact that you are going to go to the gym, even though you don't want to do the workout.
Often task-driven people have to give themselves specific times to do things as well. So if you give yourself Saturday mornings from, you know, 7 a.m. until 1 p.m. to write, and that's your time, then all of those things that call your attention to get done, you know, you could put aside. So task-driven people have difficulties too. We generally think it's the procrastinators because they're driven at a deadline who have the problem. But task-driven people, they are so preoccupied with all the things they have to get done. They come home, they see breadcrumbs on the counter, or they see things left undone, and they have to do it rather than sit down with their family and enjoy their company.
Let me read some more listener comments. Gordon writes, I have always thrived on deadlines, though I'm a professional musician. I've put off recording my music for 30 years because of perfectionist tendencies and procrastination. Last week, I scheduled a recording session with no plan. In the week prior to the session, I accomplished more than the previous 30 years combined. Well, that's nice to hear, Gordon.
That is
congratulations.
Great.
Here's Laura, who says, there's an old saying, I work better under pressure. I've reworked the saying to reflect my style. I don't work better under pressure. I just work under pressure. I'm incredibly deadline-driven and get my work done with excellence. Let me go to some more callers here, and let's go to Andre in Livermore. Join us.
Hi, thank you for the time. I think I can say that I can perform fine on task-driven or procrastination mode, but I've been reading some literature that talks about how neuroscience and cognitive psychology has the brain learn better if we can build synapses through time. So I think that it's kind of like ill-advised to think that we can study in procrastination mode. Do you have any insights that you can give us based on those of us? I'm finishing a master's degree, so for me it's really important to know if a procrastinator can be successful doing a degree that is requires a lot of math and science.
All of the high-achieving individuals I studied who were deadline-driven procrastinators did it very well. And There's nothing wrong with having that motivational style if you perform at a deadline. You've gotten as far as you have at this point having the style that you use. And so it's worked for you. The issue is how to optimize it, how to perfect it as you go along. And I devote 2 chapters to optimizing your motivational style because I don't want to change anybody. I want them to become better at how they do it already, because we are our way of doing things comes from our emotional warehouse of memories, you know, that's stored in our brain. Every time an emotion is activated, it gets filtered through that warehouse of emotional memories. And, you know, a lot of who we are and who we've become has to do with the emotional memories we've accumulated over all of our lives. So you don't necessarily need to change all of that. All you need to do is make it better.
Well, when you talk about emotions motivating, though, I mean, people can have conflicting emotions. You know, you can have two almost, well, say a negative and a positive emotion, since we're using that kind of language, operating simultaneously.
Right. Like excitement and fear.
Okay.
That could make you feel very, very stimulated, or it could make you afraid, or it could make you feel all kinds of things. When you go on a roller coaster, you feel excitement and fear. Those are conflicting emotions in a sense.
Again, we're talking with Bay Area psychologist Mary Lemieux about her new book, What Motivates Getting Things Done. And you can join us at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786, or email us forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum. A listener tweets and says, I have to identify critical and non-critical tasks and let go of non-critical tasks to keep my sanity. Daryl asks, has technology and social media added to a shortness of attention spans? Clearly it has, but how does that affect procrastination?
There was a study of about technology and procrastination, and procrastination gets linked with all kinds of things, and all kinds of things get blamed for people who delay. People delay because their emotions are not activated that compel them to do something. And unless you use certain tricks to activate your emotions, you're going to wait until that deadline.
And we won't wait anymore for more callers. Let me bring on Peter. Peter, you're on. Morning.
Good morning. I read something a number of years ago about utterly changed my life. You may have written it. I don't know. Your guest may have written it. The idea is this. It's hard to do long-term tasks that require a lot of discipline. The suggestion was to do 2 things. Schedule your hard things around your leisure activities that you really do want to do. And secondarily, the more important point was to always put a time limit on the thing you don't want to do, so that I would set my task. Tomorrow I have to finish that grad school application, but I may only work on it for 1 hour, no more. And something clicks in the brain and switches over to maybe a defiance that says, oh, yeah, well, I'll show you how long I can work on it. And it completely broke up my habits of procrastination.
I didn't write that, but I certainly have similar recommendations that if you do have a time, set a time to do something and you limit that amount of time, then you're racing the clock. And people who are deadline driven love to race the clock. So you could set a timer to a certain interval, or schedule a certain time, but only give yourself that amount of time. Or one trick they use is to schedule to do something just before you have to leave the house for an appointment. It's interesting. Many deadline-driven people get a lot of things done before they have to go off to an appointment or before they're scheduled to do something else, because they use that time period as a deadline, as a specified interval where they can get things done. Task-driven people tend to do that too. You know, when task-driven people have to go out of the house, they notice 50 other things that have to get done, and they try to get them done beforehand.
Well, Peter, it was good of you to let us know what worked for you. I appreciate that. And I should mention, Mary Lemieux, you've written a lot about procrastination in Psychology Today. I mean, have a
regular...
Yes,
in my Psychology Today blog, yeah. I do have a number of posts about that.
And let me read a column, a comment from Laura, who says, we've been getting a lot of these questions along these lines. Can the speaker talk about whether there is a connection between adults with ADD or ADHD and procrastination? I believe there's a big connection. What do the studies show?
There's a lot of controversy. I heard a lot of them at the conference I attended, and there's really...
I believe there's a big conference on just procrastination.
Yes. nothing was really significant. You know, when you think about it, if you think about a deadline-driven person, and they will often say, maybe I have ADHD because I'm doing all of these other things, or playing video games, or reading books, or doing anything and everything rather than the task at hand, they may believe they have ADHD because they can't attend to the task. However, if you take a look at task-driven people, they're distracted by all these tasks that aren't finished, and they have to get them done right now. They look as though they have ADHD as well.
Yeah, but some people do have ADHD.
Some people do have ADHD.
If it's
ADHD,
diagnosed, do we know if there's a link to procrastination?
Not that has been determined. And that so many people think they have ADHD because they are basing their experience of distraction, they're pathologizing their experience of distraction. Human beings are distracted. You know, we're distracted by tasks, or we're distracted by pleasurable things, or we just feel distracted all of the time. Doesn't necessarily mean we have ADHD.
And here's Elle. Elle, join us. You're on the air.
Hey guys. Thanks for taking my call. Listening to this conversation, I hear a lot about what to do to get, you know, a deadline-driven person to, you know, act a little sooner on it. Me, myself, I'm a deadline-driven person. My girlfriend is a task-oriented person. She'd like to get things done way before the deadline. I'm all about waiting until the end and until it's time to get it done. And if I tell her to relax one more time, I think she's going to strangle me by now. So I want to know, what do we do to get a task-oriented person to actually relax and to let them know that, hey, I've got this. Not going to do it right now, but it will get done.
Al just so beautifully stated the experience of deadline-driven people with task-driven partners. And task-driven partners have a very hard time trusting that a deadline-driven person is going to get something done before that deadline. And so it's a matter of if you tell them to relax, you're shaming them because you're saying you're not relaxed or you have a problem. So it's very important to have her understand your style of doing things and understand her style of doing things and to talk about it and even laugh about it. Eventually, you will joke about it between you, and that's best.
That can also lead to some serious incompatibilities, as you're intimating, yes?
Well, or it could lead to some wonderful compatibility because each person, because we have different styles, we have different gifts, and we have, for example, Elle could probably get a million things done at a deadline, whereas his partner may become very disoriented at a deadline when there's too many things to do and not enough time to do them. So they each have different talents, and if you were working on a project and you're a task-driven person and the other person is deadline-driven, if you write the rough draft and then give it to the deadline-driven person, they will make sure that it is perfect by the deadline and that it gets done.
And let me thank Elle for the call and read a comment from Colin, who writes, "Cultural obsession with time and use of time is a reason for this topic's salience. We see procrastination that is accepted because it doesn't hurt bad enough right now. Global climate change, infrastructure repair, retirement saving. However, if I'm viewed as successful yet procrastinated to get there, what say us then?" Let me go to more calls and we'll get Suzanne on.
Procrastination is different than neglect.
Thank you for that distinction. Let's get Susanna on next. Susanna, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because my husband has been really miserable in his professional life. He's in the tech world. He doesn't like, you know, basically the whole climate. But he's sort of been paralyzed by his sort of disillusionment. And so now he's kind of sort of doesn't think it's even worth doing anything about his situation, but it's obviously really important that he does. So I'm just trying to figure out what to do in that sort of situation.
When emotions, you know, sometimes we can't access emotions of interest or excitement that push us forward, or even anxiety that compels us to do something about our situation. Instead, what happens is that when we have a series of defeats, when we go back into our emotional memories, when we think about pursuing a goal, what we access is the defeat rather than the enjoyment or the joy of pride. And so it's very important to have him look back and find those emotional experiences where he felt good rather than the pile of experiences he's had recently of defeat or disinterest.
And Susanna, we thank you for the call. We're going to get to, again, as many of your calls as we can. We go next to San Jose and welcome Linda. Linda, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just trying to find out if your speaker finds a correlation between being chronically late and procrastination. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, and thank you for the question. Tardiness and procrastination, or habitual lateness.
It's really very interesting. Let's take the airport. The high achievers I studied, I expected that procrastinators would be the ones who would be late to the airport all the time. That was not the case. Many of the task-driven people, or equal number of the task-driven people, were late to the airport because they saw going to the airport early as a waste of time because they can get 20 more things done in the meantime. Whereas procrastinators felt good about getting to the airport early because they could people watch, read a magazine, hang out, relax. They didn't have a problem with it. So it's really interesting. I don't think there was any correlation at all with lateness and procrastination, really. Although we think of procrastinators as being late, often they're early.
What do we know or learn from people who absolutely do not or will not procrastinate?
Do not or will not procrastinate?
Yes. There are those types, indeed, aren't there?
Right, because many people have a lot of distress and fear around getting close to a deadline.
Some people who just, you know, will not put something off. It's not necessarily full of all kinds of emotions. It's just, you know, the way they're built.
I guarantee you, Michael, there are emotional memories that relate to it. For example, many people who are task-driven need to do everything early because they have this fear that something bad might happen that will get in the way of it getting done. You know, what if they get sick? What if there's an earthquake? What if something happens?
But isn't there, I mean, I guess I'm still kind of the set point school. You know, I think people have different set points, and some people just, you know, that has to be done, I'm going to do it without even feeling much in the way of the viscera or emotional response.
And you don't think that has anything to do with our warehouse of emotional memories that make us become
it may,
who we are?
But I think, you know, I know people who are just chill, as my kids would say.
See, we're not conscious of the emotions that have created who we are and the memories that have created who we are. When we behave in our consciousness, we're just not aware of all that creates us.
We're going to go to more calls. Let's get Tim on from Hayward. Tim, you're on.
Oh, hello there. I was just wondering, these types of emotional styles you're describing, they take place in the context of where you have deadlines. So I was wondering, what happens if you're in a context where you don't have a deadline or the deadlines are shifting? I suppose I'd like you to talk about the social environment or the social expectations, and how that interacts with motivation. Because there is motivation at play when you're deciding to get into obligations or deciding to set goals. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the question, Mary Lemieux.
You're right, Tim. And you the last part of your sentence said it well, when you set goals. Because people will set goals for themselves, so they create a time frame when there is none. Many deadline-driven people, for example, request a deadline or create one for themselves in circumstances that don't have a defined cutoff point, or they use a to-do list and it just is an item they have to check off of their to-do list so that it becomes something that has a deadline, or they narrow the time available in order to complete things because they consider that as one thing that has several other things behind it that they have to complete. Or they, as a commitment incentive, they tell another person of a particular time and date of when they're going to get something done. So people do just naturally create their own deadlines when those don't exist. And the social context is very important, as is the culture.
Talking with Barrier psychologist Mary Lemieux, let me thank Tim for his call and remind you that her book is What Motivates Getting Things Done, Procrastination, Emotions, and Success. And excuse me, let me read a comment from Lou, who writes, I was a procrastinator most of my life, but in my role as a technical sales rep, I have found the stress related to being a procrastinator to be too overwhelming when managing multiple projects with parallel deadlines. As I grew older, I turned to task creation. I break things up into multiple last minutes. Could the gap between procrastination and task-driven be more of a spectra? From listening, it sounds as if the relationship is binary.
It can be more of a spectrum, but in a job that he describes, there are constant deadlines. And so you have to take that into consideration, that when you have an enormity of commitments and you have a lot of deadlines, you tend to get things done right away.
And we'll get to another caller right away. That's James in Mountain View. James, join us. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. How are you? I have a procrastination issue that's caused me to become blind. I was scheduled to see doctors, and I kept putting it off. And they wanted to inject me in the eye with some kind of chemicals to relieve my macular degeneration. And I kept putting it off, and now I'm blind.
Oh, my.
So it's like you can take something to the extreme, which I have done, and now I have to suffer the consequences the rest of my life with blindness. So, and I think that there is a definite link between depression and procrastination, because I'm living it.
James, of you to be so honest about your experience. I am
so sorry you've had that experience. And I think there are a lot of emotional issues involved when someone delays to do something medically. And so many of us do that. And it's not necessarily procrastination that's at fault, but we have fears and we have distress about a medical condition, or we want to deny that we have a medical condition. And so it's very important that on those kinds of things we don't delay, but that when you find yourself delaying when it has to do with a medical condition or, you know, something to do with your health, you need to take a look at what are the emotions that are keeping you from taking care of yourself.
And here's apropos that Norris, who writes, so the core of the argument seems to be that emotions drive behavior. Could you elaborate on that?
Absolutely. The core of the argument is that emotions motivate us. Emotions are intrinsic to all human motivation. Thank you for asking, Norris. But again, we're not solely motivated by positive emotions. We're also motivated and driven to achieve by our negative emotions.
So again, let me hear, if I may, because we're wrapping up here momentarily, what tips you would advise people who are putting off really things that they could do now and feeling shameful, bad, disgust, whatever, because they're putting it off?
First of all is, don't be ashamed if you are deadline driven. As long as you never miss a deadline and your work reflects your best efforts and you're achieving, then you have your motivational style down. It's a matter of optimizing it if you need to do that. One of the things you could do to optimize it is always request a deadline or create one for yourself or use to-do lists, set timers to intervals and try to complete a task as quickly as possible, or narrow the time available to complete certain tasks, or and never take seriously your thought of extending a deadline. The highly successful people I studied never extended deadlines.
One final question. I alluded to it before. There have been studies of fraternal and identical twins that seem to point to a procrastination gene. Sherrod Paul wrote a book called The Genetics of Health, where he essentially takes that position. What are your thoughts? You think you're going to inherit procrastinating or being a procrastinator?
I don't think so. I think our emotions develop, you know, we develop these styles very early in life. Whether they're genetic or not, I'm not really interested in that. I'm interested in how people use their particular motivational style to achieve, to be successful.
Much more practical, because you could say, well, you know, it's just my genetics that's making me put these things off or be a procrastinator.
Exactly.
So we've been talking with Bay Area psychologist Mary Lamia about her new book, What Motivates Getting Things Done. And I appreciate very much your being with us, Mary Lamia. Good luck with the book.
Thank you for having me.
Again, she's a clinical psychologist in private practice. The book is called, let me give the full title, What Motivates Getting Things Done, Procrastination, Emotions, and Success. And she is also a professor at the Wright Institute in Berkeley. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. I remind you that we do like to hear from you. If you have something you'd like to let us know or tell us about what we should do in terms of programming or what we've done that you like or don't like, you can email us, forum@kqed.org. And not only are we hear from you every day, Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, but an hour is repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. Tomorrow, we're going to meet a really iconic figure. We're going to talk to Jill Tarter, who some of you remember the movie Contact. It was based on Carl Sagan's novel. She was the protagonist, played by Jodie Foster. This is a woman who has been searching her whole life for astrobiological, or shall we say, life that may be out there. Very involved in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. That's in the second hour tomorrow. Thank you for being with us this morning. And for all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.